Thank you, Elizabeth. I don't really have too much else to say right at the moment. Just give me a minute. Very proud of you, daughter. Thank you. Happy Mother's Day, everyone. Two Sundays ago, we began a new series called Thank God It's Monday. And during that series, we've had a theme verse. As a matter of fact, we have our theme verse listed right in the middle of the bulletin for you. We've had a theme verse that is carrying us all the way through this series. Now, this series is going to have an interruption or two. Next Sunday, it'll be Youth Sunday, so we have a teenager that'll be preaching during that time. And then we also have, teenager preaching. We also will, on the next Sunday, the Puerto Rico mission team will be gone, so I will be out of the pulpit, and Michael Adams will be preaching on that Sunday. So we'll continue. That'll be Memorial Day weekend. We'll continue when we get back there in June. So we want to continue this series, but I don't want you to forget the core couple of things that we've learned. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men, whatever you do. So our work is not what we get paid for. Some of us it might be, but in other folks, it's not necessarily something you get paid for. Work at it, whatever you do, with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men. We also have learned a very poetic definition of work that's listed down there from Dorothy Sayers as well. Work is the gracious expression of creative energy in service of others. Work is the gracious expression of creative energy in service of others. And we've added on a little addendum to her definition, for the glory of God. So what we say is, work is the greatest gracious expression of creative energy in service of others for the glory of God. Now, what we have said so far is that we understand that every day doesn't necessarily feel that way when we work. However, that is our aim, that we understand that God is working already in our workplaces, wherever they may be. God is already out there working, and we understand that we are going to join God in his work, and that that purposeful work is a blessing that God gives us. Now, today, I want us to focus on this day that we celebrate moms. I want us to focus on this question: how do we apply all we have learned specifically to women who work, whether it's in a paid position or something that's unpaid? What unique issues do women face as they graciously express their creative energy in service of others for the glory of God? Because I will put forward to you, it is very different to do work in this world as a woman than it is as a man. Whether it's paid or unpaid, whatever else it might be, it's very different. Now, you can understand that I do not have any firsthand expertise on how to talk about this, right? I'm not a woman, okay? Never have been a woman. So I'm going to do my best to try and put some things that I've heard, try and put some things that I've read from the scriptures, try and put them into context with some things that have been researched. Now, let's begin with a well-known poem from the Bible. Proverbs 31, starting with verse 10. A well-known poem in the Bible related to women. Proverbs 31:10, and we're going to read till the end of the chapter, says, "A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She's like the merchant ships, bringing food from afar. She gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girl. She considers a field and she buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her task." I think that means she works out. "She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes a seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring praise at the city gate. So, in this beautiful, long poem of extended joy at a wife of noble character, let's say a couple of things. First of all, this poem is set in the context of the ancient Middle East. It's a patriarchal hierarchy between men and women. Women in this culture are often viewed as property. We need to understand something. The cultural context of this passage is not what the Bible is trying to pass on to us. It is not trying to pass on that our context as a culture should somehow look like this and all women should be therefore put into this cultural context. What is trying to be passed on in this text is the truth of what it means for a woman to fear the Lord. What it means for a woman to look to the Lord for his direction and guidance. The passage is not telling us that a noble wife is subservient to her husband or beneath her husband in all things. It speaks to the encouragement, kindness, and love of a noble wife who offers to her husband, which a husband also gives to his wife. In the words of Ephesians 5:21, it is mutual submission between husband and wife. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Second thing, I want you to look at this if you have it open again. It starts in verse 10 with this phrase, wife of noble character. Now I want to tell you that the Hebrew for this phrase is actually equally appropriate to translate it like this: woman of valor, woman of character, woman of strength. It's equally appropriate. The Hebrew word here does not mean wife. It means wife in certain context. It means woman. It's a feminine word. So what it talks about is a woman of noble character, a woman of valor. I'm deeply indebted to Rachel Held Evans, who passed away last week at 37 years old. She's one who put that inside out. Now, I want to tell you, Rachel Held Evans has written some pretty amazing things and some pretty controversial things. So read her at your own peril. She will challenge you, she will stretch you, and you will find things in her that you will not agree with. But what we find in her is a woman who lost her way, ran away from the church, not because of immoral things, but because she found things in the church that she found distasteful and did not connect with what she read in the teachings of Jesus. So in trying to find her own way back, and in finding her own way back to the church, she's brought thousands more with her, which is something that we need to pay attention to. So I encourage you, read her, but read her at your own peril. Let God's Spirit teach and mold you. Now, why does it matter if we translate this wife of noble character versus woman of valor? Well, it matters because women are not defined whether they're married or not. It means that women who are not married for whatever reason can be recognized as whole persons. It means that married women are not defined simply because of their husbands. Women in this room, regardless of your marital status, regardless of whether or not you have children, regardless of your educational status, you're dearly loved by God. And you're valued simply because God created you and wants a relationship with you. He calls you into a lifelong pursuit to find forgiveness in Him, in Jesus Christ, and to then commit your life to live as a woman of valor. Finally, anybody get tired from reading that poem? Do you realize everything this woman did? She's getting up early before the sun rises. She's making sure all of her children, all of her family is clothed and fed. Somehow she's buying a field. Somehow she is selling flax and running a business on the side. Somehow she's making sure all the food comes in. Somehow she's running down to the city gate, because in this era, only men made the important decisions, and make sure her husband's okay. Somehow she's doing all of this and finding time to work out and getting the laundry done, which, by the way, was not throwing it into a machine. Anybody else tired by this? Okay, women, this is not an exhaustive to-do list for successful womanhood. This is a poem of multiple portraits of women of valor. It's as if the writer is thinking of his wife, is thinking of the teacher that raised him when he grew up, is thinking of his mother, is thinking of women he saw in the synagogue who were pillars of strength and valor. And he puts all these portraits together so that we can see what womanhood under God's direction looks like. Do not let this text be something to beat yourself up with, because you don't measure up in every arena. You're a woman of valor. You're called to be a woman of God. And deep down at the end of the day, I don't think God is measuring your womanhood by whether your laundry hamper is full or not. So let me say just a couple of things as we continue. First of all, we need to understand that in our culture, women really struggle with finding fulfillment in their work. Some women struggle with whether they should work at all, particularly if they have children. And then some women with children have to work because they can't make ends meet any other way. And they end up feeling guilty about that, even if they're in something that is their calling, that they feel that God has given them to do. And they wrestle with that guilt. Moms who stay at home, they wrestle with their children. And then they wrestle with their children some more. And then they wrestle with their purpose, and they wrestle with finding actual adult conversation with adults, because there's only so much Elmo you can talk to. There's only so many of these things you can do. Their lives become an endless loop of carpool, lunches, laundry, timeout, sibling rivalry, and of course, sick days. And add to this the very real sense of judgment that many stay-at-home moms feel when they're introduced and somebody says, "So what do you do?" "Well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I stay at home with my children." "Oh." So women who work outside the home with young children often feel guilty. Women who stay at home often feel like they struggle to find their sense of worth because culture doesn't look at that as a valuable choice. Both groups of women struggle. As a mom, how do you work as a woman of valor, whether you stay at home or whether you're working outside the home? You know what, ladies? Whichever direction you choose, it's your call. Under God's direction, under God's grace, however God has equipped you to live, whatever God has called you to do, whether it's stay at home with children, whether it's work in a career, whatever God has called you to do, it's your decision under God's direction. If you are following God's call for your life, and I believe God calls women to do both, not at the same time, but some women are called in different directions. And I trust God with that call. My mom worked outside the home. Before she retired from nursing, she had been a labor and delivery nurse. She had worked in doctor's offices for the Red Cross. She'd worked in the OR. She was a charge nurse for cardiac surgery in a major Atlanta hospital. After a while, she decided she needed to de-stress her life a little bit. So she became the charge nurse for pediatric surgery at a major pediatric hospital. My mom and I have different definitions of de-stressing. My parents were divorced. But even before my parents were divorced, my mom worked outside the home. She had skills that were desperately needed in this world. She was a fabulous nurse. And even now, she still works. She was teaching new nurses until last year, training them, passing on what she'd learned. And I think of all the folks, what all would have been lost if she was not willing to use her God-given gifts. God made a way. Friends, women, Whether God calls you to stay home, whether God calls you into the workforce, whatever God calls you to do, work at it with all your heart as one working for the Lord and not working for men. And do not allow Satan to use your decision as a club to beat you down. You do what God has called you to do. Second thing, women who work outside the home, they often face unique and unfair challenges. I look back at this Proverbs 31 woman, and I'm astounded. In an era where women were viewed primarily as property, this woman is negotiating real estate deals. This woman is owning her own business. This woman, if she would have been allowed at the city gates, would have been a leader in the city. She was a woman of valor. She works outside the home, and she does well. I wonder if this woman of valor was ever mistreated as she did so. Did someone at the used camel lot ever try to take advantage of her because she was a woman when she was buying a new-to-her camel? Did she ever get asked if she was the secretary or the servant girl at a party? Did she ever get inappropriate comments based on her attire or her looks? Did she ever get told she couldn't do something because she was a woman? Maybe even told that God didn't want her to do something because she was a woman. Still happens, by the way. It was a professor from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary this week who tweeted out a statement to Beth Moore, who's pretty well known, I think. You may have heard of her. Beth Moore saying, "You need to be careful. You shouldn't be teaching men. The Bible doesn't allow you to preach in front of men." And she responded with a tweet that said basically, "I'd be really scared to be the kind of woman that you're saying I should be. Because God has called me to do what I am doing. And God calls whoever he wants to, whenever he wants to do what God has equipped them to do." Which is why I'm so grateful that in the late 1980s, Kitty Turner was our first woman deacon here at First Baptist Church of Newport News. I'm grateful that in 2011, our church ordained our first woman minister, Susie Webb, who stood in our pulpit and led us in beautiful prayer this morning. I'm grateful that we're a church that orders who we are based on Galatians 3:28. There's neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for we are all one in Christ Jesus, and does not exclude spiritual giftedness from other persons. Now, I understand there are different perspectives on this. I understand where our church has come down on this. Jim White, our former pastor from a few years back, has a wonderful explanation of those kind of issues, and it's right back in the back in some of our pamphlet holders. It's fabulous. So I'm not going to preach that whole sermon now. If you want to come meet with me about that, we can talk about that. And you need to understand, folks, where we come down as a church on women in ministry is biblical. It's from our biblical interpretation. It's not a cultural reaction. That's where we come down, because all women are called by God. And they're called by God to do remarkable things. And they're gifted by God to do remarkable things. And the spiritual gifts are not designated for just men. The gifts of leadership and teaching and preaching. But I wonder if this Proverbs 31 woman had people tell her things that she couldn't do. You know, we might not like to admit it, but it's harder for women. It is simply harder. You know, over the past couple of decades, women have earned more bachelor's degrees than men, and yet women are less likely to be hired into manager-level jobs. They're less likely to be promoted than men are. For every 100 men that are promoted as managers, there are 79 women promoted. And yet women are higher degree. See something there? Add to the fact that in this study, a study of 279 companies with 13 million employees, 64,000 individual surveys, 36% of the women responded, reported having their judgment questioned in their area of expertise. 35% of women reported some degree of sexual harassment. 55% of women working in senior leadership reported some degree of sexual harassment. Friends, all I'm telling you, regardless of where you stand and different issues related to women and men and those sorts of things, all I'm telling you is that in our culture, it's harder for women who work outside the home. It simply is. Ladies, if you've ever struggled with any of these issues, don't quit. Don't give up. Keep working with diligence. Find your delight in the Lord and your work. And if you continue to receive disrespect or your cries for justice aren't answered, find a place to work that is worthy of your best efforts, where you're respected as a woman of valor rather than treated like an object. Because, ladies, God sees you as women of valor. He calls you to the highest level of working for the Lord with all your heart. You're created for this. Men, we can stop seeing women as objects and stereotypes. We can stop pretending that these issues aren't real. We can also stand up and speak up for women colleagues when it's needed. Where is the Bible in this? Well, look at Jesus, folks. You want to talk about somebody who stood up for women? Women were some of the funders of his ministry. Women were ones he stood up for. Women were the ones who were there at the cross. Women were the first ones who saw him resurrected. In a culture where rabbis did not even speak to women, Jesus stated fully and firmly that women are valued and dearly loved by God and called to the purpose of godly work. Now, you know what? I mentioned earlier that I really feel that there's only so much I can say about this. So I think that the only way we can appropriately close and bring this to a close is with the voice of a woman. So, for a moment of faith sharing and testimony, I'd like to invite the only woman in this world that I think is more wonderful than the woman that sang just a few minutes ago. I'd like to invite my wife to come and share.
Good morning. Ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be Anne of Green Gables. In case you've never read this wonderful series by L.M. Montgomery, or even seen the various TV shows that have been based on her work, I'll give you the briefest of introductions to this lovely character. Anne enters the literary scene as an 11-year-old girl, getting picked up at a train station on Prince Edward Island in Canada by the kind, elderly Matthew Cuthbert. He was expecting a boy. Anne is an orphan and is really hoping that the Cuthberts will provide her with a stable home, in spite of their disappointment with her gender. Eventually, they do. Anne's adventures filled the imagination of my childhood. She was competitive, loyal, passionate, bright, curious, and prone to all sorts of trouble. Anne's story does not stay stuck in childhood. Over the course of 8 books, Anne grows up. She becomes a teacher, a college student, a wife, a mother, a vibrant member of her community. She moves away from her happy childhood home and faces adult challenges. Her children grow up as a war brews across the ocean. I followed the saga of her life as if it were my own. Because of my love for Anne, the complexity of adult life was a part of my childhood imaginations. My own fanciful thoughts were not settled on the allure of adolescence only. I wasn't reading books or watching TV shows that emphasized first dates and homecoming dances and makeup as if those were the most important parts of the next step beyond childhood. I was eager to be a good, admirable, courageous, grown woman, like Anne became. Of course, I'd probably need to have 7 children like she did, too. Real adulthood, however, doesn't fall into chapter headings with plot twists that resolve by the end of the book, does it? While Anne's story hinted at some of the most important challenges that I would face, it's felt quite a bit different to experience it for myself. Most women I know struggle to feel like they are the women they ought to be. I want to wrestle out loud with that concept for just a moment. What should a woman do? What is a real woman like? The list of expectations that women feel is staggering, and they come from all kinds of sources. Of course, we must look terrific, slim but curvy, terrific hair but not too fussy, fashionable clothing but not too vain, flawless makeup that looks totally natural, white teeth, smooth legs, tan skins, tamed brows, nails that are strappy sandal ready at all times, and clearly no signs of aging at all. Indisputably, our homes need to be terrific too. Tidy, beautiful, clean, smoothly run, filled with the smells of healthy and delicious meals, clean clothes neatly folded in well-organized drawers, spotless bathrooms, and personal touches for each season for the front door and the cozy corners. And don't forget our children. We all know how terrific they are supposed to be at all times, especially at church. That's because, of course, we are terrific mothers at all times. Because we read to our little ones every day, taught them to play creatively without electronics, ever, fed them a nourishing supply of healthy meals, patiently corrected their misbehavior, inspired them to fall madly in love with learning, and nurtured an abiding appreciation and affection for their siblings at all times. We enforced consistent bedtime routines, instilled a relentless sense of personal responsibility, and modeled exemplary self-control at all times. We filled their time with meaningful extracurricular activities and planned memorable celebrations for their every accomplishment. And since we have poured so much into them, we feel responsible for their behavior and their every choice at all times. And our jobs. Oh, you wouldn't believe how terrific we are at our jobs. At no point do our family obligations interfere with our employer's expectations. We excel at the tasks given to us because the thing we most never want to be is a disappointment. We are bright and capable and confident and creative and utterly reliable. And we volunteer extra hours without pay just to make sure we're doing everything we can. And on, y'all. I could keep this up for a while. And I don't think I could exhaust the ways that women feel they are supposed to be. Fit, happy, productive, beautiful, organized, smart, nurturing, self-sacrificing, perfect. Something they can't ever be. Something I can never be. I confess that when I look at the list in Proverbs 31, I sometimes feel like I do when I step on the scale, look in the mirror, stay up late grading papers, listen to my children argue, or hear the unexpected doorbell ring and look around my house in a panic. Oh no, they are not coming in here. The voice in my head says a similar thing on all of those occasions. I can never live up to all that I should be. How pernicious is that word, should? Should I now also be waking up earlier, managing a business, making quilts, housing the poor, surpassing everyone in my household in wisdom and charm and effort? Shouldn't I also know the Bible better, pray more diligently, worship with more emotion, serve more sacrificially? How can I do better and manage all of that? All too often, I do not feel like the grown-up Anne of Green Gables that I remember from my childhood imaginings. Mostly what I feel is tired. And if I'm honest, a lot of days I've felt trapped. Trapped underneath the expectations that I know I cannot meet. See, I've done motherhood all the ways fought over in the mommy wars. We worked hard to pay off student loans and store away our resources and strip down our needs so that I could stay home all day with my small children, and I did. I also worked hard to get qualified for part-time adjunct work teaching at local colleges so I could earn a little and keep my foot in the proverbial professional door. I've been a complete stay-at-home mom for many years. I've been a part-time worker with small children at home. I've been a full-time teacher and even a mother of three with a full-time and a part-time job. I counted some things this week, so this is fun. I nursed for over 40 months of my life, changed over 20,000 diapers, and I'm too scared to tell you what I calculated was the amount of money I spent on groceries since I got married. I've taught over 1,000 students to speak Spanish and have earned paychecks from 13 organizations. At no point have I ever had the laundry done. Ladies, how do we move away from the list of things we think we should do and into the gracious life of the Spirit offered to us by the power of the risen Lord who abides in us? How can we live our lives and do the work we are called to do so that it bears the stamp of the Creator who made even us in His image? We can't do it by aiming for an appearance of perfection. We will never meet the expectations on that list we all carry around in our heads. We were not meant to live exhausted in perpetual shame and disappointment at what we are not and what we will never be able to do. If our value is not measured against a number on a scale, the cleanliness of our house, the behavior of our children, or the number of sick days we haven't used yet, where do we look to figure out who we are and what God asks us to do? One place we can turn to is Scripture, which provides us with many examples of women whom God used for His purposes in the world, none of whom probably ever had their laundry completely done either. In Jewish culture, the phrase eshet chayil, or woman of valor, is used as a blessing, often a song used to commend women who have blessed others by their courageous and servant-hearted acts. To Sarah, who laughed at the idea of giving birth to the child of God's promise in her old age, we say eshet chayil. To Shipra and Puah, two Hebrew midwives who defied the orders of the king of Egypt, trusting God and risking their own lives to protect male children born into bondage, we say, Eshet Chayil. To Miriam, who sang a song to the Lord, dancing and playing the timbrels, after Pharaoh's army was defeated and the people of Israel walked out of bondage, we say, Eshet Chayil. To Ruth, a foreigner who chose to follow the God of Israel, caring for her mother-in-law, joining a new people, trusting God to provide for them in their poverty, making a new home with a new family, and becoming the great-grandmother of King David, we say, Eshet Chayil. To Hannah, who in her barrenness and sorrow, courageously poured out her heart to God in the temple, while men around her misunderstood her and mischaracterized her grief, who experienced the favor of God at the birth of a son named Samuel, whom she dedicated to lifelong service of God, we say, Eshet Chayil. To Deborah, the judge and prophet and commander, we say, Eshet Chayil. To Esther, the courageous queen born for such a time as this, we say, Eshet Chayil. To Mary, who yielded her will to God's will and became the mother of Jesus, we say, Eshet Chayil. To the women who followed Jesus, funded His ministry, stood vigil at His death, cared for His broken body, and announced His resurrection, we say, Eshet Chayil. To the women who served in Jesus' church, on whom the Spirit of God was poured out to proclaim the good news, we say, Eshet Chayil. We are surrounded, ladies, by such a great cloud of witnesses, women who worked, who honored God with their courage and with their care and with their willingness to participate in God's purposes on earth, women who gave birth to leaders, including the Son of God, and pondered those memories of rearing them in their hearts, women who bravely looked at the tasks in front of them, many bigger than they could have ever imagined accomplishing, and obediently, faithfully, bravely did their part. Rachel Held Evans said it this way: we women are brave in so many ways. We are brave in ways worthy of poetry. We are Proverbs 31 women, not because of what we do, but how we do it, with guts, with vulnerability, with love. We honor God with our work when we carry life within our bodies, when we change diapers, when we cook, when we teach, when we make beautiful things, when we lead others, when we serve as healing hands, when we stand in the line of duty, when we study, when we write, when we sing, when we love, when we counsel, when we speak words of encouragement or rebuke, when we design things, when we build things, when we plan things, when we fight for godly principles and just causes. Women of valor, carry on. Your work matters, and you are not alone in it. Almighty God has created you, has called you, and has equipped you for good works. And he goes with you in your every task. He made you in his image, and he loves you with an everlasting love at all times.